extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. Partners in soccer, Charlie, we're back. I'm back. It's wonderful to be back. What's up, man? I've missed you guys. I saw Dave, so I didn't miss Dave, but we were both sweating.
Yeah, we saw each other more than normal.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most we have outside of what, the CCL final in years at this point. Sweaty on a wedding dance floor. Congratulations to Rich Hernandez. I don't know if he's gotten congratulations on this show yet, the producer of Instant Replay presented by Cheez-It and many other fine productions here at MLS. Mowage.
Yeah, I didn't know the sponsorship to his... Correct. Congratulations. I didn't know Cheez-Its was sponsoring it, so I didn't want to play. I didn't want to say.
Yeah, well, we've now established that. By the way, Instant Replay coming out today. We'll also have a show after the 4th of July games, which is a good reminder for you that there are games aplenty this week. I think there's a couple tonight. Yeah, two on Thursday night, couple on Saturday, bunch on Sunday, and then four more on Monday. So look for Extra Time next Tuesday. We have a big show for you coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I mean, absolute insanity midweek MLS is it's for the junkies, but my god, is it sweet. It's a wonderful thing. We'll go through everything. Brenner, 5 goals, only 3 of them count. What you need to know about the Kevin Crabal play.
I think the better term is it's purest form of, yes, MLS. It is crystallized.
Yes. You might
MLS.
Say uncut. Just a bunch of good stuff from that, including the U.S. Open Cup semifinals. yeah, we'll talk through it. LAFC, Giorgio Chiellini, et cetera, et cetera. We start with this, though, because I thought it was funny. Morgan Tenza says, what meme best represents the first half Morgs. Of the MLS season? For me, it's the Chaos Elmo Flames gif, which she sent along. We mm-hmm. asked for some contributions from people. We would love for you to send us whatever GIF, meme, I don't know, modern-day art form you think best represents the 2022 MLS season. But I'm curious for you guys. What are you going to? What are you firing up? You go to the GIF search engine in your phone, Charlie.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
defining this season so far. What's it going to be?
Mine's the, like,
I'm the guy pointing to
my,
his head.
Like, head,
yeah,
like,
but
yeah, I knew it.
It's like a little bit of both. Yeah, I'm like, what the hell's going on? But like, oh, you know.
Versus like, oh yeah, you know, I know.
What do you know?
I know what's going on here.
What do you know? Apparently, Andres says "Roll Safe" is the official name of that meme. Yeah.
Roll Safe. Well, I knew that this season would be full of random exciting things with the World Cup at following the end of MLS 2022. So I was like hyped. I knew it was going to be an emotional, passionate year. And I think it's lived up to
so Charlie,
to
that represents Charlie knowing.
U.S. Open Cup coming now. CCL champions. Finally, you know, you got Gareth Bale and Chiellini in L.A. It's just, you're like, oh, my gosh, this is, let's go. Montreal is at top of the Eastern Conference right now. What?
Okay.
So,
all right. Dave, what do you got?
It's called Roll Safe, by the way, because that's the name of the character in the movie that the guy's playing when he does it. It's a British thing. Mine is Snoop Dogg saying "Who" on Breakfast Club, because it's like Insigne. Whoa, mind bending. That's cool. And then all of a sudden, it's Chiellini. It's Cucho Hernandez. It's, as you said, Gareth Bale. It's Ace Ace. It's feel like it. It feels like it's been constant. And on the flip side, right, where it's like Brendan Aaronson's gonna go to Leeds, and now Philly has all this money, and players keep getting sold, and Kevin Paredes, and all that stuff.
It's Georgie being an MVP. Yeah, Georgie being an MVP candidate. It's a guy like Jason Russell Rowe, who we'll talk about in a little bit from the.
Well, that one I didn't say who.
Yeah, I also got to throw in. It's like Apple being the partner.
Oh, you have that one. Okay. Oh, wow. Charlie's trying to take credit for that, too. He's like, oh, you see all that? See the money in the coffers? I knew.
No, we knew it was going to be big.
I think mine, you know, you may have seen this earlier this year, maybe from the CONCACAF Champions League final, a certain extra time host. No, I'm just kidding. It wouldn't be that one. It's the Peter Vermees F off meme of just like, what? Oh, no, what? Yeah. What? Like all the time. Gareth Bale. I mean, I was classic Weeby moment on vacation. I'm texting the group chat. I'm like, did you guys see this? And like, dude, we've known about that for 24 hours at this point. Where have you been? But just whether it be a 4-4 game in Cincinnati, whether it just be the natural chaos that comes with MLS, whether it be Jose Martinez going from double to single bird, like the whole season is just as it has been for years and years and years now, just keeps one-upping itself in like sheer, I'm just incredulous so often as to what I'm seeing, what I might expect to see. It's pretty fun stuff. All right, let's get into week 17. What's the best thing you saw, Charlie? Wednesday night was a whole lot of fun. It was a great return to soccer for me.
The best thing I saw was what we saw in Cincinnati, New York City FC with Brenner scoring a hat trick. I mean, Brenner looked like a different player altogether. The way he moved, the third goal to secure the hat trick, the left-footed shot outside the box, I'm thinking to myself, where the hell was this player? This was the player they were hoping to sign. Where has he been? And how did he arrive at the stadium today? Because if Cincinnati had that Brenner playing every game, they would be in a much different position than they are right now. And they still, you know, there's all this talk that he could be sold this summer, and that I'm sure that performance definitely helps. But if they were able to keep him, if there's some path forward with him in the lineup, man, that Cincinnati team with Lucho Acosta and him kind of dictating, scoring goals, that's promising. And I think they have a lot to look forward to if they can try and keep him in the lineup.
We'll talk about him much more here in a second. We dig into that game. Ben Wright hit us up and said, when will you launch Brenner's MVP campaign here? I bet we better launch it now because he might be gone. So TBD on that one. Dave, I'm going to guess that your best thing you saw is another young striker of the American variety.
Matt Doyle is so lucky that this happened on a Wednesday night and not a weekend, and he was on the show on Monday.
Update the Golden Boot standings. Update them now.
Update the standings, Anders. Mason Toy to the top. It's not going to take long. No, but I was excited. He made his return on the weekend. He gets the start basically in the Georgi Mihailovic role, which I think is super interesting in this game. And similar to what you're seeing where Brenner playing off of Brandon Vasquez has been super effective, right? He doesn't have to lead the line. He doesn't have to battle the center backs. He can sort of find his gaps. We saw one or two of Brenner's goals, the runs underneath him that Lucho put him through for. This is Mason Toy playing off of Kai Kamara, which is different, which is new. And if it works like this, now you've got a replacement for Georgi when he's out. Scores the two goals. It's a really good finish on the first one, back across the goalkeeper. And the second one is goal-scoring instincts. It's getting to the top of the six, being stronger, wanting it more than the center back, or I think it was Nuhu who was behind him, and finishing off the play. So it was awesome to see, and the celebration's still there. Nothing has to change. It's like he's never been gone. And it was exciting to see. It was fun to see.
It can improve. That celebration could improve.
Charlie, why are you hating? Why are you the way you are? That's the meme I want. I want the meme saying, why are you the way you are?
Just let him. He hasn't had time to practice that. You don't bust that. You don't like practice the routine unless you're scoring goals, Charlie.
Yeah, it was a little squeaky.
The rust will come off, all right? We'll get it off. We'll shake it off. I'm going to go best thing I saw. Well, LAFC Dallas was a fun game. That's one of those midweek games that you circle along with NYCFC Cincinnati. That one delivered in just absolute chaos. But LAFC, what a 2-week span for them, whether it be the signings they've made, the results that they have, the sort of quiet confidence from Steve Cherundolo. But Giorgio Chiellini in the building in a beautiful, beautiful, just well cut. I'm sure, you know, the tailoring on this suit is A1. He's in the building, has his presser earlier in the day. We'll talk through some of those quotes, had a lot of interesting things to say. Basically, like, why am I here? You have so many good defenders. We'll talk about that. But they win, and Kellen Acosta drags him down. He was already on the field, so I guess he didn't drag him down on the field, but drags him over with the bullhorn to the 32-52 to do the, you know, like, call and repeat chant they do after wins with the fans. And Chiellini's like, oh, I don't think so. You could see he's like, I don't know. It's like he hasn't played. He hasn't even put the jersey on at all. He's like, I don't think this is not for me. And they force him into doing it. And then Maxime Crépeau is pouring water on his head. And he's just smiling through it. And on the broadcast, Steve Cherundolo is talking to Stone and Stu and Mo. And he's like, they're telling him what's happening behind him. And he's like, I think I got to go handle this. What's going on? It was just like, it was a wonderful moment to see like a legend of the game that we've all watched for basically two decades at this point sort of get pulled into this culture and already included. And it just makes you... It makes you wonder what this, what this LAFC team is capable of, because, you know, it isn't just technical ability, tactical ability, you know, squad depth, all these things, though those matter immensely. There's a big cultural aspect of winning, and Chiellini, you expect, is going to be a amplifier on all that. And people are like, and my first thought was like, how can you pour water on this man's suit? And then I thought, Giorgio Chiellini, his suits have seen like champagne repeatedly. Like he has more than
plus that he gets them for free.
Yeah, he has clearly more than one suit.
Armani clearly just
he
hands
knows
him
how
suits
to launder
to
or slash dry clean said suit. It's just water. He's gonna be good. But I thought that was class. Just a really cool like Wednesday night MLS moment that if you would have shown it to me like 10 years ago, I would have been like, this is a fever dream. What are you talking about?
So one of the things, though, and obviously you and me, Weeby, were there when Lawrence Simon scored through Stefan Fry's legs for the first ever goal.
Anders, do you remember that moment?
Bank of California Stadium. Anders, I don't know if you remember that moment. And Seattle called themselves a small club
at
the time as well.
You guys are cool.
But since then, I've been to a fair amount of LAFC games. I've been to a lot of MLS games in general. I think we've talked about it. I'm super excited to go to Allianz. For All-Star, it is one of the best fields, one of the best stadiums in the world. Me and Charlie were there for an Open Cup semifinal. It bounces. Atlanta's epic. Toronto, when it's good. Red Bull Arena. There's a lot of really good stadiums. The experience watching the 32-52 in the stadium when they are on and bouncing back and forth. I have been with people who don't cover MLS, who are from other parts of the world, that are shocked. And they say, that is the coolest thing I've seen in a stadium. That is special. And I think you saw Chiellini experience that in person. This is a guy who's won Euros, who's been in Champions League finals a lot of times, who's plays in the nicest stadium in Italy week in and week out for Juventus. And I think you saw the emotion, the energy, the experience there last night. And part of the pitch for all of these guys now, Insigne, I know when they put together the pitch, it's the fans. Like the in-stadium atmosphere in MLS is world-class, is elite, is league of choice, whatever term you want to use. And I thought you saw a piece of that yesterday in seeing a guy who's played at the highest level in the biggest moments sort of look like a kid and excited to
and
do it.
And it's just beautiful
again.
From an MLS perspective, for those of us that like care about the league, care about the development of soccer in the U.S., to see a homegrown turned, important USMNT player in Kellen Acosta, an all-star in this league, a guy that's come into his own as just a person over the course of many years. And we've all been sort of there to see that journey roll along, even from afar, whatever it might be, pull in like a legend like Chiellini and be that leader on the team and be the guy that's like, I don't know, that's making him a part of it before he ever steps on the field. Like to see that connection be made, super cool. So that was a fun moment. We'll see how they welcome Gareth Bale. But I want to also shout out the Timbers Pride Month TIFO. Timbers Army did an incredible job on that TIFO. And it is, I believe, what is today, the last day of June. But a reminder to all of you that to do the research, to do the work, and to do it year-round as we help our brothers and sisters and folks that are non-binary, et cetera, be their best selves and live in the best society they possibly can. It's a little bit of a scary one. Right now for a lot of people in the U.S. And on that note, I would also recommend that you go check out the call-up from this week with Jenny Chu. I thought some really powerful statements from Jill and from Suze and from Jenny about the recent Roe versus Wade decision and the awful, no good, very bad, terrifying week for women in this country, in a country that's long marginalized them. And we know inequality is already rampant, and you add this to the mix, and it's just barbaric and cruel. That's one man opinion, and that's my opinion. So, Anders' best thing he saw in Week 17. God, you got to go back to the Sounders, even if they lost. Jordan Morris scoring and waving to his dog, Maisie. Pups to the pitch. Maisie was up in the upper deck. Do you think Maisie went home disappointed with the loss? Do you think she compartmentalized that at all, or just got, you know,
Charlie
got a good scratch behind the ears? That was a pretty wholesome moment from Jordan Morris. So, all right, let's go to our lead story here, and it's Cincinnati. Like, I never could have dreamed in even my wildest dreams of watching this league and knowing Cincinnati as a club. But this is the way it would have gone down. I mean, they were up 3-0, guys, and they could have been up 4. I mean, there's a lot of argument about whether Brenner's first goal that wasn't a goal was out of bounds or not. You could definitely see the consternation on Pat Noonan's face about what he believed to be poor refereeing after this match. But Cincinnati are up 3-0, Dave, and I'm like, yo, they have arrived. This is the statement. This is the vibe. Like, they keep cutting to the...
To be clear, on the broadcast, they said, if you read Tom Bogert's piece on MLSsoccer.com, FC Cincinnati is for real, and this is your reasoning. Then they're up 3-0.
Yeah, which was perfect. It was Lucho scoring with Vasquez feeding him off a little bit of pressure. It was Lucho feeding Brenner. It was, you know, it was all the things that were like, if Cincinnati are going to be finally good, this is it. And then all the things that have made them bad for so long reared their head in the last 10 minutes of the half, and we got a gift, which is Pat Noonan having to hit the mic after that. And this was a wild game. It was a hat trick for Brenner with 2 disallowed goals. There was a save penalty by Celentano, and then a historic comeback by NYCFC. And then Cincinnati still thought they should have won. On an offside call, they didn't think that went their way. I mean, this is all you could ask for from an MLS game from an entertainment perspective.
And midweek, right? Coming off a huge game for NYCFC, it felt like the emotional tank was at 0 coming out of Philly. For them to go down 3-0 that early, to be behind the ball, to not really be controlling the game as they can, and they have against pretty much every team over the course of this season since CCL ended, then they go down 3-0, and you're thinking, all right, it's done. And then they come back. You said it, historic. No team has ever come back from 3 goals down to tie by halftime. They go up 4-3 on a stunning goal by Santi Rodriguez. Again, this back 3 for Cincinnati, mess. Pereira. No one steps. No one tracks. Madunian's obviously not tracking across the field. Blackett steps away. Cameron drops deeper, and he scores that goal. But from that moment on, FC Cincinnati played to win. They get the equalizer, and as you said, they get the goal they thought should have been the winner. It clearly wasn't. It was clearly offside. But they continue to push for it. Like, they were not content with a point, and they are not, I think, content with a point against NYCFC, which, coming out of it and saying from the run of play, fair, but in a vacuum, this is a team that's been the worst team in MLS the last 3 years against the team that's put together the best points total across those 3 seasons. So, yeah, I thought it was still an impressive performance.
I would add, too, that when you look at Cincinnati play, and you touched on it, they were the worst team in MLS. And when we say worst, we're talking about of all time up there, worst, at their lowest point. And so I love what Noonan's done with this team. He's got them playing on the front foot, really aggressive, creating chances. This team really needs to improve defensively. Really, if they want to make a real significant run at a cup, at a trophy, they need to improve defensively, because in the attacking phase of the game, they've been strong. They have been strong, and I loved watching, you know, how Lucho is kind of put his stamp on this team and trying to bring in other players. You know, I think Brandon Vasquez has benefited from playing with Lucho Acosta. But now if you get a player like Brenner, and if Brenner leaves, bring in somebody like that. I know it's tough to find a player.
Yeah, you might have to spend like, just throw it out, $10 million even to get a player like that.
Maybe. Ultimately, they are a top team. I was really impressed, though, with New York City FC when they were down. We saw him prior to his injury really, you know, scoring goals for fun in MLS. This is a player you could depend on, so much so that they said, Tati Castellanos, you're not playing up there. You're not, because Eber's our guy. You can be on the wing, maybe you come off the bench, but that's how good he was. Now you have an injury, it's a significant setback. It takes a long time to get comfortable, to get into a rhythm. He looked to me like, you guys can sell Tati. I'll be ready. So, you know, they've done a great job of signing these young players who have a lot of potential, but not yet have not yet, I guess, realized it. So this New York City FC team, new coach, maybe some turnover, but they still have
a
lot of potential.
What happens if Brenner goes? I mean, this was like the perfect, we're in negotiations potentially, and I guess Tom came on the show the last couple shows and was like, he's gone. Am I understanding that right? That like he's going to Brazil, these clubs are in for him.
Yeah, Tom was saying the offers are there, and it came on the heels of the conversation, which is the rumors around Matt Miazga. And Miazga coming, he's in the final year of his contract with Chelsea, didn't play a ton in La Liga last year, has obviously bounced around every year. And I think in what Charlie's saying, if you want to improve defensively, the quickest way to do it is to decrease your quality in the attack because you have to swap in and out big-time players. And I think Miazga makes a ton of sense for them as a team. You'd assume coming out of Chelsea, his expectation is a DP-level contract because of the money he's on. And
he should be a TAM player. If you're
okay,
if you're smart,
an expectation.
There's only one DP defender in the whole league, and it's Walker Zimmerman.
Well, there has been, though. Jonathan Mensah came into this league as a DP. Teenage Hadebe,
yeah, but that was
playing,
that was
playing in,
that's
playing
like
in a World Cup. He's playing in a World Cup.
Teenage Hadebe's a DP center
back,
right?
But that's
now
more
in
of
MLS.
Like Houston had DP, like that was the best way for them to work through
no,
the cap, but he's
not
a TAM guy.
There's a reason he's not bought down this year. He is a DP for them this season, right? In his second year on the team.
I'm telling you right now, if you are
Xavier
Arriaga
came in as a DP.
You don't bring Matt Miazga in as a DP. He's not a DP level player in this league. He's a TAM level player, a high TAM, but you're not a DP.
Charlie, you sound a lot like the LAFC front office when they traded Walker Zimmerman.
But Walker was a TAM player before that. Like if Miazga had been playing regularly, if he was in the U.S. national team right now, I could see him having that. Mm-hmm. I could see Miazga having that leverage. He's not.
Charlie, you want to eat real quick?
What do you got? What's on the docket? What are we looking at here?
We're getting tacos?
We're looking at almond.
Look at the placement of those bananas on that toast. It appears to me that every one of those bananas is cut at the exact same width. And with and there's not. I don't believe that there is a brown spot on those bananas. Those are the ripest possible bananas you can get. God, what a spoiled person Charlie Davies is.
I am very fortunate, but I will tell you this.
So can we talk about soccer?
Miazga, yes, but Miazga will add quality to
that.
Cincinnati. Yes, but DP, no. That's my take because, like you said, Weeby, he hasn't been involved with the national team in a long time, and the national team center back position has been one that has been in flux because of Miles Robinson's injury and John Brooks kind of being excluded. So that position's been open and Matt Miazga has not even come close to being an option for that left center back spot. So in my opinion, if you are not in the national team kind of roster, you should not be a DP for a defending spot.
Would love to see
him
MLS sign for Cincinnati though. That said,
can I just, the last thing I was going to say is, I guess I sort of agree with you, but I would never say that. If I was FC Cincinnati, I would let the contracts you had lapse and figure out your defenders in the offseason. I would not rush to make a move this window to be better or make the playoffs. If the right guy lands for you, fine, but it feels like they did it with Nwaboda, right? They didn't rush him. In before the season, they had their guy, they waited till he was available, and they made the right move. That's what I hope they do, because I would not try and double down on what's happening.
If Miazga is their guy, I would disagree just a little bit. If they think Miazga is their guy, go get him. Because as Charlie said,
well, if he's their guy, they have to go get him because otherwise he'll be on a different team.
Okay. But like 3 straight years of being the worst team in MLS, you're right there on the cusp of being a playoff team.
Why? They already won, Weeby. They already won. They already won this year. They are relevant. They are better. They're in a playoff race. They are good. People like coming to their games. They already won.
Oh,
why
God.
Would you take a long-term risk?
Won?
But if that's what I'm saying. If he's their guy, go get him. Make the playoffs, man. And I think the bigger question is probably Brenner.
Mate, they're in the playoffs.
Barely. They're hanging on.
They're not in the playoffs until the end of the season. Then you're in the playoffs. Right now, you could say that. But, you know, it could be one injury away from tanking. It's that simple. The game can change like that. When you have an opportunity to go out and get a player that will really put you over the top, to give you a good chance at not only making the playoffs, but making a good run, because once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. They could end up being into MLS Cup final. But I'm telling you right now, if you can go and get a player who's going to drastically improve your side, especially defensively, because Cincinnati are poor. They are poor defensively. That's what's holding them back. If they can get a real strong center back, they will improve drastically. And you go
what
out
about
and get
Brenner
that player
now?
If you can get him.
Brucho. I guess you could say Vucho. On the
Oh, man, there's a name.
Had to bring it back. Is there any sort of inkling of doubt in the mind of Chris Albright now about selling him? Or do you just have to make that move if the offers are on the table?
But this is where
I don't know. I don't know what the off-the-field situation is with him and the club. But what I can say just from looking at his performance last night is if you see that there is potential to keep that for the rest of the season and maybe into next summer, if there's a bigger shop window for him next summer, if he can continue to produce like he did last night, you hold on to him because his value is only going to go up.
So,
but that is a big if, because I don't know what else is happening behind the scenes. I don't know his mentality. I don't know his relationship with the other teammates in the front office. So if it's poor, then great. He scored that hat trick and hopefully his value improves enough and the demand. So they can
it
sell
looked
him,
like his relationship with
now.
His teammates just on the celebrations. And that's a very surface level. It looked like everybody was jacked.
Bobby Warshaw mm-hmm. one-on-one.
I mean, like Lucho Costa hurt his eye trying to chest bump the man. Like, yeah. That was weird. What were you going to say, Dave?
I would just say, to Charlie's point, it's not even just value going up. They need to recoup the value. Like, it had dropped. And these Brazilian teams, clubs, are coming in and saying, like, we can get him for cheap
bargain,
now.
Bargain
because
shopping.
You guys messed up and you're not playing him. And that's where I would say, again, going back, his value will go back up if he plays and doesn't score hat tricks over the course of this season and you find the right move for him. Again, why I would stand pat right now if I'm FC Cincinnati and continue the way things are.
On the NYCFC side, with striker real quick, Tati not in the 18. He gone? Is that it, you think? Or do you think this was just sort of a midweek rest the man? I mean, we're about to hit July. Maybe somebody hit the valuation, 15 mil.
The rumor we're hearing is Leeds United, they sold Rafinha yesterday to Chelsea for like 45 million euros, or pounds or dollars, who knows. So it would seem like if that's the way this thing's going, that could be a possibility. It wouldn't shock me if it was just a midweek thing. And I think it's a worrying game for NYCFC. Yes, they rallied themselves. Yes, the attack was more dangerous than it's been. But Maxime Cheneau goes out. Thiago Martins isn't dressed. Alfredo Morales is playing center back. Keaton Parks, unfortunately, the blood clot issue has come back. He is now out for an unknown amount of time. So Justin Hack steps in central midfield. This is a team we've talked about as the deepest team in MLS. They get Tinnerholm back. You think it's all going okay. And now there are question marks up and down that spine that this is the same team that they were, including without their head coach.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Transfer window is going to be fascinating. Inside and outside MLS, obviously, has already begun for many. Quick question before we move on to Open Cup. Patrick Witten, who has to be a Cincinnati fan, I just cannot see it being any other way, says, last night's NYCFC Cincinnati game felt like an Eastern Conference final. Fans should want that. Is there a better matchup we should want than Cincy NYCFC in the Eastern Conference final?
Wow.
I mean,
I love the passion for his club.
I don't know that he is a Cincy fan, but I haven't checked the bio.
You gotta be. You have.
Yeah,
to
he's
be.
Smiling back at me. Like, if you had to choose an Eastern Conference final,
there's no way you're an NYCFC fan, because on Sunday you played an epic game in which a trainer got a red card and everything went wild against Philly, and that's just as good a matchup as this one. So you gotta be on the Cincy
side. Is Philly NYCFC right now your ideal Eastern Conference final matchup? Would be a rematch at
yes.
full strength, obviously, because the you know last year wasn't.
Yes, I know. Goss loves Montreal, and he's going to throw them in there, and he wants them in the mix, and that's the ideal final. But
you don't want a Revs right now, revenge game against NYCFC? Carless heel.
It's
you don't want to see Carlos Hill in a conference finals.
He's still amazing. Still one of the MVP candidates for this year. But still, you have to be real. Right now, the two best teams in the Eastern Conference are New York City FC and Philadelphia Union.
Only neither of those teams have the most wins in the Eastern Conference.
I will throw out there last week's Open Cup quarterfinals, Red Bulls, NYCFC had some spice to it as well. Red card, some arguments, some post-game fights, all that type of stuff. That one could be entertaining as well.
Of course. I knew you were going to throw New York Red Bulls into
it. Listen,
dude, it's just New York City and the rest of the world revolves around it. Sorry, Austin.
Open Cup, speaking of, the semis are set. The final will be set at the end of July when the semis are played. Orlando 1, Nashville 1, Orlando in penalties. Move on. Rodrigo Schlegel, the legend, bringing Orlando not back from the dead, but they looked close to dead. They were sort of on the operating table. Hani Mukhtar, when he scores, Nashville wins. I think this is the first time ever that Hani scored and Nashville lost. Refereeing controversy in this one as well. The foul call against Anunga to set up the free kick that Schlegel scored on. People didn't love that one, including Jamie Watson, who was calling the game. Seemed pretty soft. And then Sean Davis got sent off. He had a first foul yellow, and then he had an obvious yellow in the game. This was Open Cup at its best. PK shootout, yada, yada. Great stuff there. Orlando Red Bulls is one side of the semi, and then Sporting KC Sac Republic is the other side. So we still have a USL championship team, which is awesome. Tom told me, Dave, that you told him that Orlando has priority on hosting. What do you know about hosting the final? Do you know that?
What are you talking about? It was an open draw.
Was it? It's already been done. Oh, yeah. I missed it.
Wow! Insider sources: David Goss first to report. Breaking news. Yeah, it was Orlando and Nashville had first right to hosting. SKC has second right based off the teams that are left. Red Bulls is third and Sacramento.
So what are we hoping for here before we talk about the game? Because we're going to go to the final. What are we hoping for? We hoping for Kansas City. Come have a little fire in the Weeby backyard, you know? Let me show you the city a little bit.
Nice.
No?
Charlie's
come
hard
on,
no.
Charlie.
Charlie will come, go to Sacramento
come,
during
come
the KC
Come break bread
game
with me, man. Come see the boys.
Orlando all day.
Orlando.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, Explorer Stadium will bounce. That game would be epic. It'd be fun. If they're
Disney World, like
Disney
Charlie
World,
what
are you talking about, Charlie?
He goes every year.
No, he's already been. He doesn't have to go back. It's the same place. It hasn't changed. It's not like it's going to be different when you go this time.
Wow, Weeby, you're so upset.
Yeah,
I'm taking it personal. I'm truly taking this personal.
Yeah, clearly.
What do you who you might see at Disney World? All right. What did you think of this game, Dave, as our resident U.S. Open Cup aficionado?
I didn't think Orlando was great. I didn't think they created chances. I didn't think they were goal dangerous. It actually felt like from Nashville's goal on, and credit to Hani Mukhtar for the way that goal happens. I think he's the only one who sees that goal, and he makes just that extra effort play around Schlegel's body to finish it. I didn't think Orlando had ideas or ways to score. So the free kick, obviously, that's where the magnitude of that moment, I think, comes in. And then Panico was good all game, but didn't deal with a ton of crosses. And he comes out and misses. And Schlegel, you know he's going to hold his steel in that moment, his nerve, because he's the Schlegel. And then Orlando still doesn't score up a man after Sean Davis's yellow card, second yellow, in the 91st minute? Like, they basically played all of extra time. But in saying that, this is what we saw from Orlando when they made the playoff run 2 years ago. This is sort of what we saw at times in MLS's back. Oscar Pereira's teams have an ability to grind through these moments. And I think this is a team that's sort of between time periods, right? You lost Nani. You lost DK. You lost a lot of big pieces from last year's team, Chris Mueller. And I think Cara and Torres can be the future, but they haven't arrived yet. And you're sort of in this weird in-between moment. If you could steal a trophy in that moment, if you could host the final and have that moment in your market, I think that's the perfect setup to say, let's bring in the next guy. Let's build around Facundo Torres. Let's roll into the future.
Bummer for Nashville. Thought they had it, man. Hani Mukhtar is, He is like the heart, soul, core, everything for them. You talk about Lucho with Cincy and what he's brought and how he's changed things. I mean, Hani, that's one of, honestly, it's one of the best signings, arguably. And, you know, they had a win to go MLS history, but in recent MLS, Hani Mukhtar, one of the best signings made in this league. Really incredible player. But bummer for Nashville. Weren't able to get it done in the high leverage moments. They might point to the referee, but yeah, PK winners, Orlando. We'll find out who's going to host that final at the end of July and who's going to be in it. U.S. Open Cup, always a blast. How about Seattle, Montreal? We got hit up here. Montreal, Seattle is at one of the year's biggest statement wins, Charlie. What do you think? Montreal going to Seattle, doing this without Georgi Mihailovic.
I would say it's huge. More so because of the mentality for Montreal. If you can go on the road to beat one of the better teams in Major League Soccer.
He paused so long before he chose what to say.
Did he pause or was he like finishing chewing his peanut?
Oh, that was an almond. You think that was an almond?
Yeah, that was like the almond butter sticking in his mouth a little bit.
No, I wanted to be very careful with my choice of words because they aren't up there in terms of points where they should be because of the talent that they have, but they are one of the better teams in the league. And you go out on the road and win, and Mason Toy coming back healthy, and he's been battling, you know, injuries, particularly his shoulder shoulder surgery that he had. And that left-footed finish, Goss, when you talked about it earlier, that was a brilliant finish. That looked like he could have been left-footed because the contact that he made, the area of the goal, side netting, I thought, man, and we've had our rants on Mason Toy because his potential is through the roof, but something has always been holding him back. And whether that's his attitude, whether that's the mentality, whether it's injuries, but over the course of time, you expect a player to grow. And it seems like he kept talking about Montreal being the right place for him. You go there, Henri is the coach at first, someone that you've always looked up to, someone that has a similar stature and body that you do in that position. You learn from him a little bit, but it's not smooth. It doesn't go over, you know, super smooth. He goes through some injuries, some rough patches. Then you have this long-term injury, but he feels like the support's always been there, which he hadn't had before in the past. I think Mason Toy, again, after watching those goals and the way he moves and plays, ultimately, he could be a real strong candidate to get back into the national team pool as one of the stronger American strikers with kind of the tools that he possesses. But again, doing it consistently and having the right approach and mentality every single day. If he could do that and live up to that, his potential is through the roof. But again, potential is nothing if you don't have all of the other things that are going to go into it. And so I hope that now we're only going to see that from Mason Toy every week. And I think with Kai Kamara pushing him too, you're getting that vet experience. Hey, I've scored a lot of goals in this league. You have some tools I didn't have, but you got to work and you got to have the right mindset and being a teammate. These are the things I went through. There's no better person in Major League Soccer as a striker to hear from and talk to than Kai Kamara. How many ups and downs has he had as a professional? He's been around a long time. He's seen a lot of things. I think for Mason Toy to continue to have those conversations so that you can grow as a person on and off the field will be super beneficial for him.
Here's a weird stat for you. OptiJack put it out. Montreal has won 6 of 9 MLS matches against Seattle. It's the only team to play the Sounders more than 5 times and have a winning record against them. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I saw that.
And sort of leads me to tee you up. If you want it, Dave, Wilfred Nancy, I mean, his coach of the year resume continues to grow. They're atop the East. They have the most wins in the East. They had a stretch at the beginning of the season where they didn't get the results in the league because they were focused outside the league on CCL. That didn't work out, but they have come back with a vengeance. And then you have the other side of it, which is whether it be veterans like Wanyama or all these young players that are playing so well, or like, you know, a guy like Joel Waterman, he's getting the best out of his players. And that's the mandate for a coach.
And reminder that even in CCL, because of being that Canadian team, they did beat a Liga MX team. They pushed Cruz Azul as well, although Santos Laguna was bad. So they got those results in CCL. And then he turn Georgi Mihailovic. Turned is probably the wrong term, but he helped spur him to being an MVP candidate and now is getting the results without him on the field. Kyoto's been in and out of the team. Obviously, Mason Toy hasn't been there. Kamal Miller now has been in and out of the team. He's lost guys for international a ton as well. And after that dip, they are now back up as the top team in the Eastern Conference. I think he's the leader for Coach of the Year candidate. I've had him in as a finalist the entire time, even when the dip happened, because I think it's fair to have level expectations for them. And maybe that's unfair to a Steve Cherundolo or Brian Schmetzer, right? That there's higher expectations. But if you get Carlos Vela and Gareth Bale now, I think it's easier at times on some level. So he's the guy, and this is huge for Minnesota. They go to Galaxy on Monday. That's very realistic 3 points. They come back from the West Coast playing LA Galaxy in Seattle with 6 points. That'd be mind-blowing without Georgi Mihailovic.
Christoph Hamill asks, does Joel Waterman deserve a call-up to Canada for the next international window? What do you think, Dave?
I've pushed for it for a while because I think not only has he played well, but he fits the back three really well. And that's what it feels like is going to be the lineup, especially against Belgium. There's just a ton of depth in that spot right now. Like, he's behind Scott Kennedy, who's moving in to the Bundesliga already. Kamal Miller, Steven Vittoria, who's been dominant for them. There's been questions.
Alistair Johnston.
Yeah, there's been questions. I think he's deserved the chance. At this point, it feels like John Herdman's group is complete and he's not a part of it. But you'd assume after the World Cup, he'd get opportunities.
Charlie, here's a question for you. From Gianni in my DMs. Does Seattle need to make a signing before the transfer window closes? With JP out, Vargas out for an extended time, that's a bummer for Obed. Can they challenge for the cup while having their depth so thoroughly depleted in the center of the park? Atencio has had an up-and-down season with injuries and other issues. Roa has struggled to play the 6 or the 8, he says, and Rusnak has not played up to the contract he signed. I don't entirely agree with that last part, but do they need to make a move? And Anders, I see you in the chat. Go ahead and chime in, man.
They don't need to make a move, but they could. And this group, let's be real, they could slump in to the playoffs and be Western Conference champions. That's the reality. When you have Ladero, when you have Rui Diaz, when you have Jordan Morris and the Roldan brothers, you have some real impact players. Now, I think if they really had somebody in mind and it fit, you could make it work. You make that signing. But ultimately, I think it just comes down to everyone having to be healthy. And I still think Nico Ladero is still catching up to his old self in form. He could still be an MVP candidate easily. And this team just needs to get going. That's all. Everyone healthy on the same page. And they don't need to make a signing, but I think a signing would definitely help.
No answer from Anders. So he's saying stand pat, I guess. Obviously the best team in the league, no matter what. Just gonna assume that's his answer on this one. All right, let's go to LAFC Dallas. Well, we'll start with Dallas real quick. Jesus Ferreira on the free kick. How do we feel about that one from a technical execution standpoint?
I mean, good. If Maxime Crepos reads the play properly, it's not a goal, right?
He came charging out a little bit, huh? He thought that cross was coming.
Yeah, it goes down as much to the play, which is credit to the, I don't know if it's the coaching staff, I don't know if it's the players who came up with it themselves, and Ferreira then recognizing the opening. So I'd say all in, pretty impressive, and 10 goals, right? That's already a season maybe better than we expected from him this year. At the number 9 spot, and he broke, I think, a 5-game scoreless drought. So it was a pretty big moment for
him. Anytime he scores, it's just a good thing. Just, you know, as we build up to the World Cup, as, you know, in my mind, as we build up young American players who choose to continue development in MLS, and you would think that Jesus Ferreira's development might come outside of MLS someday soon, given the rate at which he's going, and I think the contract he signed is in large part to provide leverage for a sale for FC Dallas, in addition to obviously rewarding him for really spectacular play and potential. But yeah, every goal he scores is a good thing. And if you're a USMNT fan, you got to be clapping. If you're an LAFC fan, you got to be pretty happy that they laid it down. Really happy.
Pretty
some great
happy?
Goals. You have Chiellini in the house doing press conferences, wearing tailored Italian suits that he gets for free. Gareth Bale's coming soon. He's he's got the hat and the jersey on somewhere, planning his travel to get there for El Tráfico, which is going to be absolutely insane at the beginning of July. We're like about a week out from that at this point. What is there to be, what would you be most happy about, Charlie, from this result if you're them? Chiellini in the house and being welcomed, Carlos Vela looking super goal dangerous, even though it didn't always come off. Sifu, Opoku, Arango, Musovski.
Keep going. What I will say is you're battling probably one of the teams that are going to be competing in the playoffs for the Western Conference Championship. This was a statement game, knowing that you're getting some important pieces. So this will kind of set the stage as far as FC Dallas coming, thinking they can come to the bank and grab 3 points and really compete versus being played off the park. And, oh, now they're getting 2 world-class additions. It's that feeling. So if you're LAFC, the momentum is ridiculous right now. You are riding that thing to the moon. And this team, I think Steve Cherundolo has done a really good job of keeping them on course, not letting things get out of hand, getting everybody moving in the right direction, making John Thornton, making the right signings. But again, you've got to keep everyone healthy. And it looks like Carlos Vela, like you said, is getting more fit because his movement looked a little bit better. There was a little bit more change of pace.
Is it fit or caring and being settled?
I think it's both. Yeah.
Because the news did come out between shows here that Carlos Vela, he's back. Yeah, so that was big news.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very fair question.
But I think more importantly for the team, because they were not going to win a trophy without a goalkeeper they could trust in, Maxime Crepeau, he's that player. He's finally a goalkeeper you can rely on. He will make the save, of course. Every keeper has a gaffe, as you saw with this goal and Jesus Ferreira. But Crepeau is one of the biggest additions that I think is probably not getting the respect it deserves when it comes to signing a keeper that is a game changer for your squad.
In direct comparison to the outside of the years of Tyler Miller, the keepers that they were rolling out there in the past. Chiellini, we talked about the water pour and the chant, etc. But he has some quotes here I want to discuss. From his press conference earlier in the day. Quote, "I want to be honest. When I start to see the team, I said, they have fantastic defenders. Why'd they call me? Everyone talks about Mamadou Fall, but I can say Jesus Murillo, Ibiaga, who played the last matches and also on the wing. He's watching, baby. He's watching. LAFC has fantastic defenders. It's a fantastic team. Surely I can help them. I can help the team, not just playing, but leading every day the group. And this is my game and what I think. I have fantastic teammates, and this is important." Steve Cherundolo said in the post show on FS1, that Giorgio is basically hitting him up, texting him, being like, "We should do this. We should play like this. We should change this." Trying to ask, trying to dig in and trying to coach a little bit, like as you might expect, he might, as a veteran coming into this situation. Any changes in what you think you should expect? Anything that you feel like you might have learned in the last couple of days about Chiellini, Dave?
Not really. That's sort of what you expected, right? He is a veteran amongst veterans. Like, you look at an Italian national team and a Juventus team that was filled with guys who have won everything, and he's the voice of those teams and he's the leader of those teams. We met him in Atlanta for the All-Star game. They threw him on the spot to speak to, I think it was a group of owners of Major League Soccer teams, and he spoke brilliantly, and you're like, yeah, this guy's a statesman, right? He has all of that to him already. So not super surprised. And at this point in his career and the way he's coming in, you have to think he understands he's not going to start 34 games in the next year, right? LAFC.
Does he want to even?
No, I think that's sort of what he's saying in all of this is like, I can see how I can fit in. And he's not coming and saying, we're going to win a title because I'm going to carry us there.
Right. He's humble. Yeah. He comes into it with a humble opinion. And how could you not love him if you're a player being like, oh, Chiellini is saying, like, if I'm Mamadou Fall, or if I'm Ibiaga, and this is the legend that's coming into the group, and he's
name
already
dropping.
Talking about me, he's name dropping me. What kind of player is that to come into a locker room as a role model and a leader to say, hey, no, you guys are already doing great. I'm just coming in to try and help you and you know, maybe improve your game. Like, that's incredible.
Now, there are too many players at some point. They signed Danielle Henry coming into this year. Eddie Segura returned in this game. Just the last 3 minutes, he's been out for almost a year, so that doesn't mean he's a starter every day yet. But that's six center backs? Five center backs? If I'm counting correctly, they went out and picked up...
Somebody's got to move.
Yeah, they went out and picked up two fullbacks. They picked up two center mids in the offseason. They're talking about bringing in another DP on top of Gareth Bale into an attack that has Vela, Arango, Brian Rodriguez, Opoku, Cifuentes. So there's a lot of good players on this team. There might be too many. And if I'm a team in MLS right now, if I have a need, I think LAFC is the team you're looking at and saying... Can I pick a center back off here? We talked about FC Cincinnati. Is Danielle Henry the short-term fix or Ibiaga? I didn't even say Ibiaga. I think it is six center backs. Is that the short-term fix for this year instead of going out and finding someone overseas? Is Latif Blessing available for a team that's willing to give up? I would give up a good amount of allocation on because he's on a reasonable deal and bring him into my team for, I don't know, 18 MLS teams out there. So it's interesting to see how this part of it all plays out as Bale and Chiellini are not on the books yet. They have not technically arrived.
We had a lot of mail about like, oh, how can LAFC do this under the rules? Like, what is the TAM contracts? What is this, you know, this hocus pocus? The wool is being pulled over our eyes. And I just say, look, every GM in this league from the beginning of time has looked for ways to massage and fit under the cap, some to better effect than others, some within the rules more than others, as we might have seen down in South Florida.
But also, they sold a Uruguayan international to Fenerbahce for $10 million.
To Palmeiras.
They sold Atuesta to Brazil. They've sold big players. They traded Marc-Anthony Kay last year for a good haul of allocation money. Now, they've given some up for Maxime Crepeau and Franco Escobar and now Kellen Acosta this year in the other direction, but they've sold a lot of players outside of Major League Soccer, which recoups you money.
So let me ask you this question. What do we think the DP9 is going to look like? And it feels like Thorington has had sort of mixed messaging on it. I thought I saw somewhere that it was going to be like, hey, come in and start sort of in prime player. But Dave, you were telling me that he said on Football Americas that it's more of like a project nine, more like a Rodriguez or what Rossi was when they got him, like a guy to develop and sell down the line, which would make sense having Vela and Bale around him to maximize output. What do we think they'll go with the number nine and who might be on that block? Like my first thought when Danny Musovski scored last night was like, somebody should make an offer for Danny Musovski. Because the minutes for him are going to start to evaporate. I mean, they got Cal Jennings behind him too, that people have been yelling about wanting to see more for a long time. Might not be his level yet, but you know, you have sort of a cheap backup option. If they get a nine, is Chicho Arango going to play a ton? Like he's a TAM player that would have huge value within MLS.
I think Arango is an interesting one because you would think a lot of teams would idea. I mean, he scored 14 goals.
He would have huge. I mean, he could potentially set the allocation record if he was to be available for trade. At that level of production for a nine, a TAM.
Would Kansas City come in
for him? He feels like he could fit.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know.
Chicago as well. But here's the thing. He hasn't been a starter this year before Bale arrived. There's something odd going on where it feels like he's rotated in and out of the lineup without Bale being a factor. And I don't know if that's a style thing. I don't know if that's a form thing. It's been a little bit odd. So you would think he'd be the one. I thought that what I heard multiple times was that young player idea where I thought Thorington sort of said we're set at every line pretty much. Let's bring in a young player who can learn from these champions and winners. And they did it with Horta and they've done it with Brian Rodriguez again. So it feels like it makes sense and it makes sense to me. But at the same time, if you find the right nine and you say, hey, let's cash in, let's win a title or two, it would make sense. Reminder that Bale, I don't know how you do this to yourself again. Gareth Bale's contract will end on June 30th of 2023. They will then have an option. That option is a DP option. So somehow they're going to have to massage their way to having an open DP spot at that point if they want to keep Gareth.
I don't know how you have Brian Rodriguez at that point. Like, if we're talking about minutes evaporating for people, like if you're talking about going and getting a nine and you have Arango and you have Gareth Bale and you have Carlos Vela, you start to, I mean, it's just a crunch. It's a huge crunch.
Opoku.
I don't know. Well, it's going to be extremely interesting to see how this might go about happening for LAFC on the front office side. And yeah, TBD. One note on the Chiellini thing, and it sort of popped in my mind a couple of days ago, but even more so, Dave, when you were reminding me of when Juventus came to Atlanta and sort of the statesman, quote unquote, he was, and also just sort of his gregariousness and also ability to speak English in a way that I think would provide opportunities for him. We've seen guys like Thierry, like Nesta, be coaches in this league. We've seen other coaches jump off. If you're Chiellini, maybe you're coming here to get a little experience and find out whether or not you want to start your managerial career, which I guess I would expect him to have in MLS. Maybe there's a little
real estate in Charlotte, North Carolina, Giorgio Chiellini.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, Chiellini as a MLS manager, if this is sort of the first domino
for,
yeah,
for
that would
Ray.
Be pretty awesome. Yeah, I would be down for that, no doubt about it. All right, Chicago Fire 1, Philadelphia Union 0. Tough one for the Union. Jim Curtin saying basically afterwards, well, you know, we got to match the intensity, and they had a pretty intense one against NYCFC over the weekend. But losers of the Fire, who have now won 2 and 3, but we are going to focus on the one, the only, Jose Martinez in this segment. He is our fast, reliable, secure D-mid of the month, presented by AT&T 5G. He is an absolute legend. Jim Curtin says he's arguably the best number 6 in the league. We'll dive into that as well. But, Charlie, we got to start with this man's personality. He got sent off in this game, 2 yellow cards. It was a deserved send-off for him. He was yanking, pulling on the second one. He knew, and the Chicago Fire mm-hmm. fans knew, that they were going to heckle him a little bit. And after being suspended for what Jim Curtin called a gesture, two-handed gesture, I might add, after that NYCFC match.
Fined. Huh?
Fine, correct. Apparently, Jose does not like money because he went and gestured again to the Fire fans. He has a me against the entire world personality, Chuck, and I think that for sixes, that maybe matters for more than any other position on the field.
Yeah, most sixes are ruthless because, you know, outside of, you know, there are a few in the league that I'm like, oh, they like to get on the ball. They find that, you know, they're great at picking up second balls, getting it off their feet, timing challenges. They make play predictable, but they're not in there roughing up, hitting you. And Ozzie Alonso, I think, is probably the one that always comes to mind when I think of defensive midfielders who always left the mark when they won a 50-50. Always. And probably like to talk a little trash. You love them on your team. Jermaine Jones, another one that was very physical, kicked you, got a lot of covered a lot of ground. Shaury Joseph, another one who always had those arms up. You either left with a scratch or you left with a bruise playing against Shaury because his arms were always out there. And I think you're talking about the same type of style as I'm coming in hard. I'm going to win the ball. That's the expectation. And you can hate me because I don't care. You're playing with that I don't care mentality. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to help my team win. You love to play against them, love to play with them. You hate to play against them. And I think that's exactly what they have in Jose Martinez. And he fits just the Union style, the city's style. They've embraced him because they're like, it's us against the world. And we're proud of who we are, and that's him.
And when
you've played
unapologetic.
Doyle tweeted, is Jose Martinez authentic. The most Philly athlete since AI? And that's hyperbole probably. But tell him, you've played there. You understand the culture. What is it about him that connects mm-hmm. so much with that culture?
The commitment to play, give it your all, every match, 110%. You're never questioning his commitment to the team or his work ethic. And it's in the manner he does it, the style. Philly fans just are loving it. They're feeding off of that energy that he brings to the table every single game. And it's clear that the teammates value him. It's almost like, oh, guys, you know, he's on fire. We got to cool him off right here. We got to cool him off because he's playing with that fire. And that's the expectation from Philadelphia sports fans, is that you not only give 100%, but you play with this fire, something that we as Philadelphia fans and residents can be proud of. And that's what he does. And he has obviously a touch of class.
Jim Curtin says he's the best six in the league when he's on. Dave, is that fair? Is that right?
Yeah, I had to jam him in at the top five at his position preseason, which I think is fair because he was going up against people who have done it for a number of years. But now you're talking about a guy who has shown week in and week out across multiple seasons in MLS. I'm going to vote him as my starting defensive mid in the All-Star game this year. And when Charlie...
He's not mine, but...
And when Charlie talks about the style, right? A team who... Their aggressive nature, their attack, is by winning 50-50s and pressing and attacking off the ball. He is as key to his team as any defensive midfielder is across Major League Soccer. And you're talking about a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, that won Supporters' Shield 2 years ago, and that, again, this year is at the top of the Eastern Conference. And he is essential to what they do in that way. And when he's on the ball... When they are playing well, he's finding passes. He's simple. He's clean. He can break lines as well. You know they want to be direct fairly aggressively. He understands that as well. Remember, this was a Philly team that had some of the best center mids in MLS that played completely different than him. Medunian left. That was what felt like a lot of was built around. He came in under the radar, unknown. He came in potentially behind a player who was supposed to start over him. And within 3 weeks, it was... This guy is here to stay, and Philly, they built their team around him at this point, and it's been working.
He is our fast, reliable, secure D-mid of the month, presented by AT&T 5G, Jose Martinez.
I would say, you know, Jose Martinez is clearly one of the best defensive midfielders in Major League Soccer, but if you're talking about someone who's really been consistent and central to their team's success in terms of being a provider – I just don't know how you don't start Ilya Sanchez in terms of what he's been able to do with LAFC this year. He's fit in perfectly, and he's been that important cog to find the spaces, find the gaps, but also get the ball to Carlos Vela's feet, get the ball to Arango's feet, get to Cifuentes or an outside back in Hong Center Palacios. I think he's been fantastic, but obviously it's a different mold of a center back. It's
not number six, you
mean. Diego Charas of the world and Jose Martinez. Yeah, number six.
I love that about the position, right? Is that it can, within any any given structure, any given team, any given tactical identity, that it's not just sort of like copy-paste. We need the same type of guy. Everybody's got to be combative and like, you know, ball winner. That you can find different profiles of guys to thrive in that spot. And that's one of the most fascinating things about the game to me, and in particular the number six position, is that you need something different. I also just am fascinated. Jose Martinez, man, he must not like money because he's about to get fined again, I would predict, for another gesture. I don't know. Maybe he's driving – maybe like Philly traffic, he's getting a lot of middle fingers. I don't know. Like, he's definitely in the habit of
No, he's loved. He's
maybe,
loved,
but like, you know, driving there might be a difference. I don't know. He's seeing a lot of those. Somehow that's crept into his gesture vernacular, so to speak.
I'm curious right now, who's more important to the Union, Gazdag or Martinez for you?
That's a great question. I think it has to be Gazdag because he's literally the only one scoring goals. But to the previous argument, I think Martinez is more important than Ilya because they don't score. And if they're not getting the draws or they're not getting the shutouts, they're not winning versus LAFC, where they can outscore a team 3-1 or 4-2 or 5-3 or whatever else. But that's
tough. Sounds right. All right, quick hits here. Toronto loses to the Crew. Jason Russell Rowe. The star in this one, and it's a revenge game, so to speak. He was a Toronto FC Academy guy, and then he went to the Crew, and he had a journey to the first team, and in his debut with the Crew, he goes and hits Toronto with two assists. Tell us the story here, Dave. I know you walked through it on MLS Today, which everybody should be listening to on Twitter Spaces or subscribe to the podcast feed, but do us all a favor, and those who missed it, walk us through his story.
He was like the guy in the academy for years for TFC, leading all their academy teams in goal scoring, T2 as well. Obviously, Ayo Akinole was ahead of him. Josie and Javinko were on the first team. So there wasn't really a pathway. He went to Maryland for a year, had a really good year in college. And then, as we talked about with Tim Bezbachenko last week on the show, there is a ton of knowledge that has come from Toronto to Columbus across their front office. Corey Ray, as well as Issa Tall, as well as Tim Bezbachenko himself. And so in building Crew 2 and trying to bridge the gap of, so under the new ownership, they're building top down. They haven't fixed the academy to the extent that it can be as competitive as the other teams. They found some stop gaps in talent that they thought hadn't been ID'd, hadn't been given the opportunities. Jason Russell Rowe was given the chance to lead them in MLS Next Pro on Crew 2. Golden boot leader, leading scorer in the league, one of the most dangerous players. And then you look at a Crew team that trades Jassy Zardes, is waiting for Cucho Hernandez, has struggled to really just have a cutting edge in the attack, have aggression, and is sort of on the older side as a roster anyway. And so he got his opportunity in two games as a lone player from MLS Next Pro. That triggers the fact that he can no longer play. He has to be signed. And so then on Wednesday, the Crew traded for his homegrown rights from Toronto FC. They start him for his first career MLS start at BMO Field for a kid from Brampton. And he gets two assists and three key passes in this game to lead his team to a 2-1 win in front of his family. It is honestly an unwritable script for a professional career. And he's still just 21 years old.
So how was that not your most exciting thing of the week?
I could be excited by a lot of stuff.
That's incredible.
Just so happens that both those things. Well, I guess only one of them happened in Canada, but you know, there were Canadian connections on both of them. By the way, for Toronto, Domenico Crescito is signed, who has sort of been rumored for a long time. Will he play?
Crescito. I've already been yelled at. Yeah, Michele already yelled at me.
Michele, you're just so cultured. I appreciate it. Crescito.
Yeah, well, he speaks Italian. Yeah, he's
Domenico Crescito. I'm just going to keep saying it over and over. Officially signed. Whether he'll play left back or center back is a big TBD. Whether Alejandro Pozuelo will be part of this team long term is a big TBD. We've already talked about him as potential trade bait. Maybe goes outside the league. I don't know. We'll see. It's hard to see how a midfield of Pozuelo, Osorio, and Bradley can hold up, like Jimenez, Insigne, and maybe Akinola, whoever else they might sign in the summer. But a lot of work to do for Toronto, quite obviously. Galaxy 2, Minnesota United 3. Loons go to LA and get a win. Producer Anders, his reminder of the day is he's pushing the panic button on LA, who is with him. First, I just got to educate the people out there because I needed to be a little educated on this as well. The Kevin Cabral red card that Greg Vanney was very unhappy about, and so was Chicharito in his post-game interview. By the IFAB laws, if you just go look at the IFAB laws, I'm completely in agreement with Greg Vanney and Chicharito and obviously Kevin Cabral on the field that I don't think this is a red card. It would be a yellow card from those IFAB laws. But there is a directive from MLS to pro referees from the competition committee, basically, and it was decided because MLS is very committed to basically the health and safety of the players.
Innovative.
In terms of concussions, that there was going to be a little bit of a change in how the laws were interpreted when it came to goalkeepers and situations going for a ball and getting hit in the head by another player. So there are four things that they're looking at in those situations. Technically four. I'll explain here in a second, Charlie. Four things. First, can the attacking player actually make a play on the ball? And in this case, Cabral is not going to make a play on the ball. He's about 3 yards out when it's gathered. He knows he's not getting to it. He's there to try to pick up a possible rebound. Maybe it's fumbled. That's his right for sure, but he is not going to get to that ball. The second one, does a defending player push that player so they don't have control over their own body? That doesn't happen in this play as well. Third, do they make every attempt to get out of the way of the goalkeeper, to avoid contact? I would say that Cabral made what I would probably call, and he made an attempt, no doubt. He's raising his foot. He's trying to jump over a little bit. But did he make every attempt? No, I don't think so. I don't think he made every possible attempt. And then fourth, then if you contact the goalkeeper's head, it's a red card. So the referee in this situation, Ted Uncle, the VAR, Alejandro Mariscal, even if they were interpreting the IFAB rules and saying, under those laws, this is a yellow card for us, which is under the laws what I think it would be, doesn't matter. The MLS directive to them is that this is a red card based on those four criteria. This is something that was explained, as I understand, to players and to coaches in preseason and the meetings that they always have with the competition committee as well as pro, saying these are what the directives are for the year. This is what you need to be aware of. Like, in this situation, this is what will happen. So it was a strange one. And no doubt, did the call change the game? Yes. But under the directive from MLS, it was the correct call.
And I will go into it with the, obviously the key word was every effort to avoid the contact. Now he definitely,
I would even say it was reasonable, perhaps. There's no doubt. You'd even call it reasonable.
But the word every, that's the one that I'm like, could he have dove over?
Or just jumped higher? Because like, he kind of just is like dragging over the top a little bit. Like,
yeah. So if that's the key word in that criteria, then he didn't do everything he could to get out of the way. Made contact with the head, and he was second best to the ball. So if that is what they told every MLS team, then that is a red card. And that's unfortunate because, you know, it kills the game. And I don't think Cabral really had it. There was no intention. But if you're lazy and you get caught, you know, it's just unfortunate. So it changed the game. And obviously Minnesota wins. They go up 3-0. They gave up two goals on a late run from the Galaxy. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, yes, I'm in agreement with Anders. I'm hitting the panic button on this Galaxy team. Their back line has been atrocious. The defending has been atrocious. Yes, they have some playmakers. Diego Costa hasn't been strong. He hasn't been consistent. He gets a red card as well in this game. Yeah.
For a DP, like
Chicharito.
That might be kids. That might be kids
for a Galaxy DP as well. Like, all right, he's been trash.
I wasn't just trying to make you say it, but you know, just trying to yeah. imply for imply a signing what might of, be the issues here.
Yeah, for a signing of that magnitude, he's been trash.
By the way, McKelly just tweeted. All hope is not lost for the Galaxy. The team is trying to finalize a couple of additions. One, a DM or a six, and two, an attacking midfielder. Both would be international caliber players. That could also potentially mean moving to a 3-5-2. That's all I know, says Michele Giannone of Tudiene.
Mm. Well, my thing is, you don't have two strong center backs, and now you want to go to three?
Strength in numbers.
This is a take I disagree with, Charlie.
That's like saying... And this is the same thing when you don't have one quality striker, but you want to play with two strikers. When teams do that,
so I don't know that would be my thing.
So why do you think?
But I do think that the game gets easier when there are three center backs for a lot of center backs. They don't have to be as complete. So if you have an incomplete set, plus if you play with wing backs, there's less movement of players trying to break lines themselves or move up the field and then have to recover in transition. That's the only thing I would say. Also, this team clearly doesn't have a 10. So that's sort of another way to get through that. Instead of playing a 10, you play three ball-capable center mids. You play wingbacks that have some license to play. And obviously, Jovalich and Chicharito work up top. Just throwing it out there.
So when you do know, though, when you play with three center backs, you have to be more comfortable on the ball. So you have to be able to pass the ball. You got to break lines because your outside backs get so high. So those three center backs have much more responsibility on the ball and also for covering the gaps. So if you have two center backs who can't do it, so what makes you think that three, if you're going to add one, is going to make it easier if they couldn't do the original task?
The other thing is one of the three might be Revelison.
That's my point.
So now you change the can't play on the ball, cover ground type thing. Because he played there when he first got there, and that might be the move as well.
And maybe they go to the. Maybe they just have to accept that they need to win 3-2 instead of losing 3-2, or win 3-1, and that shutouts are not going to be a consistent part of their identity, at least as currently constructed. TBD. Last one from midweek here: Timbers 2-1 winners over the Dynamo. Shout out to Darwin Quintero, who just keeps scoring goals, and. Santiago Moreno, who had a brace in this game. Well done. Portland on a roll with some back-to-back wins there. Going to throw this one out. Carl Carpenter in the mailbag, and we'll just get it started. What player who is currently underperforming, excluding those dealing with injuries or other mitigating circumstances, do you think will have the biggest resurgence the rest of the season? And the really obvious name that jumped to mind for me immediately was Carlos Vela. You mentioned, Dave, that maybe he's settled now. He's going to have a couple high-profile teammates in there to take some of the shine off of and spotlight off of what he's doing all the time, and having a counterbalance of Gareth Bale, however much he's able to play, as well as all the other quality that's in this LAFC side, whether it's starting or coming off the bench. It just feels like we might get that vintage Carlos Vela for the remaining months of the year, which seems to be outside of that one historic season, the Carlos Vela way. He'll give you two, three months of just absolute blinding brilliance, and it sort of feels like we're on the brink of that. Mm-hmm. Any other names jump to mind?
I would say Patrick Lamala, if he trusts his numbers, and I think a decent amount of the performance has been there, but if he starts finishing, now you're talking about a guy who's would be all around one of the best strikers in the league. And obviously there's a gap there for the Red Bulls, where if they were getting that production, they'd probably be sitting on top of the Eastern Conference. So that was the first one that popped in my Facundo Torres as well. But I think that goes more to getting more comfortable as, you know, a young player. Everything I see from him is that he's special. Like on the ball, watching him play, it's all there. It's just about that final production.
And I'm going to go with Eber from New York City FC. He's played 13 games this year, only three starts, but he scored a brace yesterday, and that's because Tati Castellanos wasn't on the pitch. I think if they sell Tati Castellanos, which I think has to be encouraging when you see Eber line up there, because Tyus Magno could easily be that guy where they say, okay, we're going to use you. But if you envision a world with both of them working, Eber and Magno, maybe that's, I think, more gives New York City a little bit more encouragement and safety, knowing that they can make this sell, have it be a great story for the club, but also know that it's not like you're giving up hope on winning another MLS Cup. You still have two quality players who can score goals.
You say yay or nay. Yay for resurgence, nay for you don't see it. Jesse Zardes.
Yay.
Ooh. Nay. Nice. That's what I was going for. I was going for two sides. On the yay side, Dave, give me a quick yay side.
He's done it every year of his career since he got to Columbus, and Colorado set up for it. They have been unsteady as a team overall, but I have belief that they'll get back to the top, and I think he'll be a big part of that.
Okay, how about Ura? Although injury might be a mitigating factor for him, as well as some of the visa stuff he went through, but we'll just include him nevertheless. Mikel Ura, what do you think, Charlie? Yay or nay? Yay.
Yay.
About Bobby Wood. He's injured, but when he comes back to a better RSL team, let's say on the attacking front, yay or nay? 3, 2, 1.
Yay.
Okay, two yays. Yay. Nice. Okay, all right. Frank O'Hara. He's getting a lot of chances. The chances.
Nay.
That sucks. I wish it would happen for Frank O'Hara. Still remember being so excited when they got that signing over the line on a free. Swiderski in Charlotte.
Yay. And the reason I say yay is because you have a World Cup in front of you. You have no option but to perform and play. So I'm going to go with yay, because you got to get the motivation back to ensure that you're in the squad.
Kasper Schabilko.
Big
yay. Nay.
The biggest yay. I am the only Kasper Schabilko fan out there that doesn't have a last name that starts with P and Y.
Nice.
Because I seem to be the only one in favor of him. I think he's creative. I think he can create chances. I know he's missed big opportunities over the last few games, although he's right on with his XG for the year, which isn't great because that's part of their attack issues. I just want to see him with Jairo, Mueller, and Shaqiri for more than two games. I just want to see what it looks like when that attack is together, and the pressure and focus on him changes.
How about this one? Last one on this. I'll make it a three, like a trio here. Cabral, Costa, Grandsir. Yay or nay? As a group, even one could be bad. And the other two are decent. You said nay.
I'm
going to say nay on that one as well, unfortunately. Would love to see it. Would love to see it. You know my shrine, but... All right, a little more mail here for you. We got some, I guess GP straight out of the OC has been blasting us with Pepe to RSL. Does it make sense? Should they do it? I guess the last few shows, and he hit me again, although you guys talked about it. But Ricardo Pepe did score at a friendly for Augsburg, and that seems like not a competitive goal necessarily, but his first goal in a long, long time. So that's good news for him. And PFOC to Union Berlin. They were the fifth best team in the Bundesliga last year. Charlie, do you think... Jordy PFOC has a chance to get back in the U.S. team before the World Cup?
Absolutely. He needed to make a move from the Swiss League. If you can go to the Bundesliga and keep the same type of scoring that we saw him do in Switzerland, that he will essentially vault his name all the way back up to the top three, because the Bundesliga is really a good baseline where you can say, hey, if you're scoring X amount of goals in the Bundesliga, which is one of the top leagues in the world, then we will find a place for you on this national team. Whether it's starting as the nine, because he's going to have to develop and figure out different ways to score goals and be effective in the Bundesliga, or if it's coming off the bench and being effective. But if he can continue to improve, because he needs to improve, and that's the only way he was going to improve is by being tested in the Bundesliga, then for sure, that's a great move. A fantastic
last one. I just want to get your guys' reaction because I just saw it come through. Go ahead.
Can I just break everything here real quick and just say Ricardo Pepi, glad he's scoring goals. He scored against TSV Schwaben Augsburg. And if you want to know what that level is, TSV Schwaben Augsburg plays in the Bayernliga. It's the highest amateur football league and the second highest football league in the state of Bavaria and the Bavarian Football League. It is one of 14 Oberligas in German football, the fifth tier of the German football.
I like a good Oberliga personally.
Now, I've been there before. So playing against these teams in Europe, it's not so much the competition as much as it is just your personal confidence. So that's why you get excited, because it's not, oh, he's scoring against a high school team, but it's because, oh, he's scoring and it's good for his confidence.
Yeah. No, Charlie, I don't disagree with you. I just found the excuse to read the word Oberliga and say Schwaben.
I thought it was Oberliga. I don't know. Either way, it's some
Uber. Uber. Yeah, but either way, it's not about the competition. It's more about just being able to go out there and score and get your confidence.
Last thing, Christian Pulisic to Juventus. It's the Daily Mail, but talking about a swap deal. What do you think? Weston and Christian at Juve. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Three? Nay?
I already said yay.
Oh, yay? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I'd like it, but it's not going to I don't think it happens. No, it's an American owner at Chelsea. He's not – Christian's
not going
anywhere.
Yeah, but the swap is for Matthias De Ligt.
All right. That's it for the show. It was great to be back. Great to talk, banana toast and everything else with you guys. Remember, two games on Thursday night if you're listening right when this thing comes out. A couple games on Saturday, bunch on Sunday, and then four on July 4th. Enjoy your holiday, everybody. We will be back here on Tuesday. We'll see you next time. Adios.